Skoliosehilfe, der Podcast für alle Skoliose-Betroffenen und ihre Familien. Von und mit Conny Pollack.
Welcome to the Skoliosehilfe Podcast, which means the Scoliosis Help Podcast in German. Today's episode is a very special one because you might are asking yourself right now, why is Conny speaking English? Normally, all episodes are recorded in German, and of course, there's a very, very good reason for this change. So when you're not sharing the native language of your interview partner, then you have only two possibilities, and one is simply not recording the episode, which would be a really shame, or we simply switch to English. So I'm very glad that we chose the second option, and today I have the honor of interviewing Dr. Sabrina Donzelli. Dr. Donzelli is the president of SOSORT, which stands for the International Society on Scoliosis, Orthopedic and Rehabilitation Treatment, and is a highly respected scoliosis specialist who has dedicated her career to improving scoliosis care worldwide. So Sabrina, welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited about today. And first of all, thank you so, so much that you took the time for this interview.
So thank you for inviting me. I'm really sorry I can't speak German, but I'm super happy to be here. And I think it's very important to give good information to the patients because scoliosis is a rare disease and it's normal to feel a little bit alone sometimes just because it's a rare disease. So not every people experience this. And so...
And also yeah, not every expert. So the other side is also very interesting.
Absolutely. Yes. Also for like an old doctor working in a hospital, scoliosis patients are very rare most of the time, despite the work in orthopedic field. Mm-hmm. And so also for them, orientating through this pathology can be quite complex indeed, because it's a complex pathology. So without seeing a lot of cases, it's quite hard to orientate and guide the patient. So sometimes also the patient has the feeling that also the doctors doesn't know what to do, and that's a bad feeling. Mm-hmm. So providing good information to the patient and also the education for the doctor is essential, but in the current situation, which is similar all over the world, independently on the type of health system that every country could have, there is a big effort done for the related costs and the difficulties to invest money in health in many countries. And of course, then rare disease become the Cinderella of the system.
Yes.
And so this is what happening in many, many different countries, where the closure of specialized outpatient clinics, just because the number of patient treated was too low, and the transformation into general center will make more difficult for the doctors to be specialized and harder for the patient to have good responses related to what they are really experiencing. So in some countries, there is this trend, like in Italy. I'm from Italy, and this is a trend. So scoliosis patients have to look for specialists in the private.
Yes. A very, very important topic. Yeah. So I really liked the term you used, the Cinderella of the system. Oh my gosh, I need to remember that one. That's a really good one. Sabrina, we first met at the Scoliosis Up to Date course in Regensburg, Germany in October 2024. And I was honored that I not only listened to your presentation, but we also have wonderful conversations with you during the breaks and breakfast and lunches and so on. And I'm so, so happy that you're now joining the podcast and the that you are here and you said yes after I gathered all my courage to ask you if you would join me here. And of course, in advance, we were brainstorming a lot about making this episode the most valuable we could make out of our time. And therefore, we have divided this interview into three main parts. And the first part is that you tell us more about your journey as a scoliosis specialist and your role as a SOSOT president at the moment. And then in the second part, we are talking about SOSOT and its guidelines. I think there are very few patients who knew the SOSOT guidelines and how they impact both the practitioners and the patients. And in the last part, we will get some key therapy insights. We will talk about bracing and sports versus therapy, a very interesting topic. And of course, also the mindset and the motivation. So, let's dive in. Let's start with your own journey. What inspired you to focus on scoliosis treatment? Could you tell us a bit more about your journey to become a scoliosis specialist?
So it happens a little bit by random, you know, life is sometimes is surprising. What is funny is that for some sort of strange reason, I decided to take medicine because I wanted to become a rehabilitation specialist, a physiatrist. So I had this idea in my mind since the beginning. And then by chance, it happened to me that I took a course about low back pain and I started working in a back school. It was done when I was a student. And so that was the moment in time I started working on spine, and it was by chance, and it was to make some money to buy books for studying medicine, which is quite expensive. But then the spine remained in my life. And so my dissertation for my degree was on low back pain. And when I moved from Milan to Turin, for my residency, when I arrived there, it was like, oh, you are expert in spine, so you will work on spine. And so I started working in spinal units. So I saw different version of consequences of spine traumas, which again, patients after spine surgery. And so life always puts spine into some of my activities. Mm-hmm. Then I became a specialist and I started working in public hospital. And it happened practically by chance that I found that this institute totally dedicated to scoliosis and spine was looking for a doctor. But this institute was far away from my home back in Milan, and I was living in Turin and I had two little girls, 1 and 3 years old. So I thought to myself, though, that's impossible. I can't go there. It's too far. I have two little children. I'm a mother. I have a family. But then after 1 month, this institution published again the announcement. They were looking for a person to take that job. And so I told myself, let's listen what they are looking for. And so I went there and I told them, I'm a mother. I live in Turin. I don't want to move to Milan and I don't want to move my family to Milan. What are you offering me? And then I took the challenge and I started traveling every day. And this was hard choice to be done, mm-hmm. but it gave me a lot of opportunities. And honestly, I discovered scoliosis field because I took this opportunity. And I took also the challenges behind that. I remember in the interview I did, they told me, what do you think is interesting about scoliosis? And my answer, I perfectly remember, it was that, you know, I like that there's a long time relationship with the patient. Mm-hmm. And as a physiatrist, I like this kind of relationship. And so the opportunity to have this relationship with adolescents, mainly growing people, and guide them during the 3-4 years path is something that really attracts me. And then it's something that can really change their life. So, you know, in many fields of rehabilitation, sometimes you can change a little bit. Most of the time, there are no risk of damage. In scoliosis field, what can really trigger a strong passion is the fact that we can really change life of our patient. Of course, the reversal of the medal is we need to take some risk and we need to be very careful, because whatever we do will have an impact, and this impact will not be always positive. This is kind of stressful, and this is the reason why it's hard to find rehabilitation specialists willing to work in this field sometimes, because in most of the rehabilitation fields, there is not this drawback. Most of the time, we can impact positively or have no impact. In scoliosis, we can have a strong positive impact or a negative impact. Mm. So this is making very hard. And we need to take the decision, and it's stressful to take decision that have an impact. So my journey started there. I was super lucky, super blessed, because I had an amazing mentor with 13-year experience in scoliosis who taught me everything about that. So I had a great support. It was stressful for me to take decision, because I take into consideration the patients, and I want to them to have good impact from the treatment and not a bad one. But I had a strong support from a mentor and a strong support from a system, because this institution was really created at that time to provide good treatment for the patient. There was a good informatic infrastructure. We had the software guiding the visit, the measurement, clinical evaluation. And then it was easier to confront with the other colleagues about difficult patient, because you know scoliosis is very complex, so this can be in some way frustrating sometimes, but it's also the reason why it triggers the passion, because the complexity and then the ability to find a good solution or a good help, providing good help for the patient, that's an amazing feeling after that. But it's hard. It's not easy. And every single patient is different. So to give you an example, let's imagine a patient with 22 degrees of scoliosis. We can treat these patients with 5 different treatment options, maybe even 10. If they go to 10 different specialists, yes, they can go home with 10 different prescriptions. So if we have a patient with a severe curve, like 45, 50 degrees, it's easier because we have not so many options. But if we go milder, which is the majority of the population with scoliosis, then the option can be totally different. Then we will talk about right or wrong and balance between under and over treatment, speaking about scoliosis and guidelines. But related to the journey, this was part of what keep up my passion and my involvement into this. I was lucky because I was in an institution totally dedicated to that with a lot of experts. So amazing opportunity to learn and grow. I was not alone deciding things, and so on. And I had also the opportunity to do a lot of research. And research was the connection with SoSearch. So I started this journey end of 2010. And then in 2011, I was for the first time at the SoSearch meeting presenting two researches. So I had an amazing start. This is not typical. I was super lucky. You know, sometimes I really arrived in this institute, and we were a bunch of doctors. We were just three of us visiting patients, so easier communication, a lot of projects, a lot of work to be done, but a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. And this gave me the opportunity to go to Saussure my first time. It was in Barcelona. I had no barriers with the language because at the high school I studied languages. So I would not say comfortable in speaking in an international congress because it's stressful. But I was confident that I could do that despite the stress and the anxiety behind that, of course. And I remember it was an amazing experience. I met a lot of amazing people, passionate people about scoliosis. So what is amazing in Saussure is that is a growing community of passionate people. The passion is towards the challenges behind scoliosis treatment with the vision to be able to improve the quality of and reduce as much as possible the impact of the treatment for scoliosis patients. There is this common language, despite we are in an international society with many different professionals, different languages, different, let's say, schools of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because scoliosis is really a strange field. Is different from any others because it started with this schools, this like, how to say, thread of theoretical principles behind correction and improvement of the curves from the conservative point of view. The major schools, the eldest one was in Germany, and then there was a movement in Europe of these schools. And sometimes it's like, I don't know how to say, hand maker job. You have the father who transmitted to the son and so on. Many times the schools in the beginning were like families. So, and there was this transmission of knowledge from parents to son or between siblings,
mm-hmm.
Which is very similar to hand maker. And I don't know, like it's strange. It's not, you know, medicine is an art too. But in this field, there's a lot of this. And the same is for the orthotists. Sometimes it's really tradition that pass from one to another and move forward. And the biggest name went around Europe. They became like famous and creating trends on treatment. We can talk about Cheneau.
Mm.
Cheneau went around Europe teaching how to make brace, and he made the history of the European history,
yes,
of scoliosis. Mm. And so this is special in Europe. Then, of course, these trends changed. There was an evolution of the schools and branches coming out of there, but it's really a special field, and there could be some disadvantages on this because, when we go far away from science and medicine, there are some risks for business, and so there could be some, let's say, confounders on what the goal is. But really, yeah, so, but in Saussure, really there is a common vision on improving outcomes in patients, avoiding surgery. And it's really an amazing community of people having the same goal. And it's a special experience because, you know, we always expect differences when we interact with the other countries. And I was really surprised and amazed. And every year I came to Sosurt, I discover again and again the beauty of the community. And it's still right now, despite the growth that Sosurt had, because now we are more or less around 300 member. And in the beginning, it was like 20, 50, something like that. So there was a significant growth all over these years. And but the feeling of being a community with these strong goals in common is really still very, very strong. And it's the reason why I'm proud to be the president of Sosurt. And I never aimed to become the president, but then it happened. And so I'm here. And I'm the first woman president too. That's a strange thing.
Congrats. I didn't know that. Okay. Wow. So you're a role model of that too, I would say. Not only a doctor with two kids and you're making a career and you're a mother too, but also very, very glad to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was very lucky. I had a lot of help. My job was hard because I was working a lot and I was traveling. So I was about 1 hour by train. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, you arrive to the station and then you have to get home. Or when you arrive to the station, you have to get to the office. So it's about 3 hours per day of traveling, which is not too much because if you live out of the city more or less to reach the office, it's similar. So, I had a good help at home and I had long on holidays. So I was staying home every time the school was closed. So this allowed me to have good times with my family. So when I was home, I was really home. Mm-hmm. And now I can tell you, because my daughters are grown up, that I don't know how I did it, but I was really able to transmit to them the passion I was putting in what I was doing. And so until now, I never received any complaint from them, just a lot of support. And I think that is one of the... It is not one. It is for sure the success of my life until now.
Oh, wow.
You know, because a mother is all, becoming a mother is associated to guilty feeling. Mm-hmm. And even though you are working and we have to work to make a salary and sustain our family, when you are happy to go to your job, you feel a little bit guilty. I was blessed because I really had the enthusiasm to work, and I was able to transmit it that I was really doing something with a lot of passion and not to make a salary, or not because I didn't want to stay with them.
Yes,
it was like I had a parallel mission to be done, and I had a lot of help from my family, my husband, and my mother-in-law supporting me and supporting this passion too. So in the end, it worked. It's not always easy. Mm-hmm. And without help, it can be really harder. For me, it was easier because I had a lot of help. And I think it's transmitting values and passion to young people is essential.
Yes,
and it's
totally
always possible to work with such a passion. So I'm perfectly aware that I was super lucky and blessed. But I also took big challenges. You know, I really took the opportunity, even though it was far away from home. I told myself, let's try. I'll try. If it doesn't work, I will go back and say, okay, I tried, it didn't work. But then it worked for 13 years. And it was an amazing journey. And
that's an amazing thing. I think it's not only related to the to our professional part, but also to other things in life. That when you get an opportunity, that you go for it and you try, and even if it fails, so it's never really a failure. So you learn something about it, and then you move on and you take the next challenge, the next thing that's coming up.
Yes, you know, this is also strongly related to the treatment of scoliosis, because, you know, sometimes scoliosis is able to hide itself very well. So there is also a lot of guilty feeling from the parents.
Yes.
That we're not able to see it, but that's normal. It's really one of the scoliosis skills is to hide itself very well. Particularly the most aggressive form, they can really hide themselves very well until they are big enough to create a lot of troubles. So even in those cases, when the curve is quite severe, trying conservative treatment is always a good choice, independently if then the patient will need surgery. But going to surgery with the awareness of having tried whatever,
yes,
it's totally changing the attitude and the experience of surgery. Because I think accepting surgery, feeling the failure and the guiltiness of not having done something earlier is really bad. So as in life, we need to take some risk. I have to tell you that when the curve is severe, there is no big risk in taking some time to try conservative treatment. But then the attitude towards surgery is really different, because you are aware that there are no other choices, and you tried something different. So so scoliosis can be a quite hard, strong life school. If I think about my patients, they are all super strong person. Most of them are women, but I guess I would bet whatever that in life they will be super strong.
Yes.
If they find the right direction. Because.
But I think they are super strong. They are super strong, but they are also very empathic to other people. They are very kind people. They are kind of respecting other people and hearing them. And is this also your kind of thinking when you see a typical scoliosis patient in front of you? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We know life experience can really change the attitude towards life. So,
yes.
And scoliosis is for sure an impactful experience in many ways, but it could even be in some positive ways, because really make aware that we can really adapt to hard situation, we can find a way, we can be very stronger than we are expecting or guessing. The hardest part is that most of the time this is happening when we are very young, and so the strength generally come all over life with age. So finding this strength so early is not easy, but then is something gain that is part of personality,
yes,
that can change the word in some way. So, you know, hard experience can be really life experience, positive life experience,
yeah,
ability to adapt to new situations.
I always say that my scoliosis is not only bad, I don't see it as bad, and it taught me a lot about life. And when I'm looking at my age companions, then sometimes I think, okay, I've learned many lessons years before them.
Exactly. So then it could be an advantage in life.
Yeah, right. So we see it like that. It's an advantage. Sabrina, I have a question about the research, as you are very deeply into that. Can you just take us with you? How many there are a lot of scoliosis topic that there is a research going on. In which field are you, and what fields are existing, so that our listeners can just have a big view on the topic scoliosis research?
So when you think about research, let's imagine you want to start a research. The first step is which kind of gap we have in the literature. So search the literature, find a gap to be filled, and then plan how to fill it. Okay, that's the typical procedure of a researcher. Okay, so in scoliosis field, there are a lot of gaps. And some of those gaps are quite huge and wide. So there is everything to be done, fundamentally. This can be something like interesting in some way, or frustrating a little bit. There are some big challenges. In the scoliosis field, we are dealing with treatment that are not pills. So the treatment is to human from humans. Physiotherapists are humans. They have a relationship with the patients as well as the doctor. And of course, and then bracing. And so this is making, as in many rehabilitation fields, a complex intervention. They are really defined complex intervention because there are many different factors influencing the final outcome, which is not just the treatment itself. Mm. It's everything, okay? And scoliosis is not just Cobangle. Scoliosis is many other things and factor we can work on. So
thank you very much. I just have to interrupt you. Thank you very much for this sentence, because a lot of patients have the feeling that they are reduced to their cop angle, and it's always cop angle, nothing else is mattering. Yeah,
but then on the other side, in research we need to measure something. Yes. So the problem is that we need cop angle because it's one of the easiest measurable characteristics of scoliosis. All the immeasurable factors, we know they are there, but we can measure it. And that's a big challenge behind that. So in research, you know, one time I've heard an expert and he told me, it doesn't make sense to do research because every time you have a lot of bias, a lot of the interpretation is so far away from the clinic and then is useless. So why doing such a big effort for finding something that is not 100% applicable to everyday practice? And this was a clinician, not really involved in research, but we need research, despite research is hard. And many times what we find is a little piece of the super big puzzle, but we need to pursue this because we want to find good clues to guide the treatment. So I'm very passionate with the research when research can provide improvement in the quality of the treatment. In our world, research is done to produce papers, because in the academic career, the number of published papers is relevant, is essential. This publish or perish situation, which is really around the globe, that there is no country where there is no this situation. Sometimes is affecting the quality of what is published, and sometimes there's a lot of published paper that are really useless for the patient. But theoretically, the principles behind research is whatever you are trying to do, the first question you should ask yourself is which type of gap are you filling, and then how this will help the patients, and then how this could help clinicians, and then how this could help other researchers in improving it. So sometimes we forget this essential part. But if we remain on this goals of research, it's really interesting, but there's a lot to be done. If we think about what is really hot topic in the field, so currently we are a lot talking about artificial intelligence, but we need the data to apply artificial intelligence. So in the field of scoliosis, we don't have large and strong and methodologically design a systematic collection of data. The reason why this has not happened yet, despite we talk within SOSURT about this since more than 20 years, it's the complexity also of the type of data collected. Imagine a patient entering the first time for a visit and coming back every 6 months for 2, 3, 4 years. We have a lot of measurement done. Then there could be the measurement taken by the physiotherapist, audiotherapist. So it's a very complex structure. This is one of the challenges. Then it could be challenging when providing a physiotherapeutic treatment to collect data, because it's time consuming. So there are a lot of barriers, but I think, if I have a vision on what SOSURT can do, is really trying to guide a creation of a systematic collection of data that will, in the future, provide good information about the best treatment, the quality of the treatment. But first we need to collect data, and we have about 10 years ahead of us to implement a systematic collection of data and having it, and then really being able to apply artificial intelligence. And in the end, and this is my very strongest passion about research, is artificial intelligence is useful to produce prediction model. A prediction model is a magic equation, magic because it's an illusion that we have that we can using data to predict the future. Like it happens with weather forecasting, we can use what happened before to understand what will happen in the future. If we have big data on this, we can really try to classify scoliosis in all multiple characteristics of every single scoliosis patient, track the history of that specific situation, put everything together, and then being able to predict which patient will be exposed to higher risk and which one will not or will solve, because there are also self-resolving forms, and then on the opposite side, very aggressive forms. So this is exactly what is my dream. I don't know if it will happen in in the future.
I hope so. I hope so. So I just wanted to talk with you more about SoSort, because you have described to us what it is and that it is mainly, of course, for expert in the scoliosis field. But there are also these SoSort guidelines. And I think that could be also very important for the patients out there. So can you tell us what are these SoSort guidelines? Why are they important? And maybe help patients and experts alike.
Thank you so much for turning into today's episode. As you might have guessed, we are ending this part with a key question that will be answered in the next episode. So be sure to join us for part two, and there we will dive even deeper into topics like bracing, sports, and therapy. So if you found today's discussion helpful and interesting, please take a moment to rate the podcast. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and share these important insights. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Until next time, take care and keep moving forward on your journey. All the best.